We're turning this morning to John chapter 7. We're starting a new episode in the life of Jesus. John chapter 7. And I hope you are. I'm thoroughly enjoying going through this gospel and I'm seeing connections I've never seen before. God, I think, is really taking us through the life of Jesus as a church together. I'm excited about it. So John chapter 7, we're going to look at the first 24 verses this morning. But before we get there, I'm just going to give you a quick thing. Here's what happens. This is my short form version of it. There is a great big festival down in the city in Jerusalem. Jesus is up in Galilee with his brothers, and every faithful Jewish person would make the trip to the city to go to this festival. It was one of the big three festivals. It was one of the important things for a Jewish person to do. If you were serious about your faith, you would make this trip. And so the brothers of Jesus are kind of ribbing him. They don't believe him. They say, come on, if you're who you say you are, you better come with us down to the city because... Let's face it, all you are is a little hick preacher up here in the north. If you want to make a name for yourself, you got to make a name for yourself in Jerusalem. So come on down to the city. And Jesus says, not going. Not going to go with you to the festival. And the brothers say, oh, whatever. And they leave. Then a few days later, Jesus sneaks in quietly. And so, before I read it, I wanted to share what life is like in Bible college. Because when you're in Bible college and you're just starting out, you think you know everything. And you think your opinions are very important. No offense to Bible college students. But I didn't even think of that when I said that. I'm thinking about my life. The way our dorms were set up was there was this big figure eight with rooms all around it, and in the center was the common room. And so we had curfew back then. We had to be in at a certain time, and we didn't want to go to bed because you're college students. So we'd all sit around this common room in the center, and there'd be all sorts of discussions that would go on. And we would fancy that we were very intelligent, deep theologians. And one of the things that really... One of the topics that would come up frequently was, did Jesus lie? He told his brothers he wasn't going to the party. He shows up at the party. Did he lie? And so, of course, we all have our opinions about what went on there, right? And I'll give you just this is a window into what life was like. So we'd be sitting around, and one person would take the textual option, which is this. In verse 8 of John 7, I'm going to read the text in a minute. In verse 8, Jesus says, you go up to the feast, I am not going up to this feast. But some translators felt it was so awkward that it looks like Jesus lied there that they put in the word yet. And so some of your Bibles might say, you go to the feast, I'm not going there yet. So some of us took that textual option. Well, of course Jesus didn't lie. He said, I'm not going there yet. Others of us took the very literal option, and it's as if Jesus was tricking them with his fingers crossed behind his back. I'm not going up. Not today, at least. And then he didn't lie. He just kind of was slippery. And then others of us took the spiritual meaning, because in John, when you hear that Jesus went up, it has this connotation of up on the cross. And it's true, he may have went up, but what he really meant was he's not going up to his position on the cross yet. And we would have these really useless discussions about things like this. And we would think that they were important. And when it comes down to it, the best word I can think of to describe it is muttering. I was reading I read the English Standard Version, and I know I'm sorry about that because most of you use their NIV and you don't know what I'm reading. But anyways, in the English Standard Version, there's this one line that just jumped out at me. It said, and there was much muttering about them. And it struck me as a line from Monty Python or something. And there was much muttering. And muttering, the definition of that word, muttering, is to kind of talk about someone behind their back and voice your opinions about them. So it would be like me sitting like this and going, I don't know what Sal's doing sitting up here in the second row today. And like muttering, right? Muttering behind someone's back. All along, never realizing that we were Christians. Jesus was right there. He was right there with us. And we were muttering. So this morning, we are going to look at four different groups of people that are in this text. We're going to look at the brothers, the people, the Jewish leaders, and the crowd. And we're going to look at all their different opinions about Jesus and their muttering about Jesus before we turn it around at the end to think, what should our real attitude toward Jesus be? So, let's read the text, John chapter 7. After this, Jesus went around in Galilee. He would not go about in Judea because the Jews were trying to kill him. Good reason not to go somewhere. Now, that's not in the ESV, that's my comment. Now, the Jews' feasts of booth, or feast of tabernacles, if you have an older translation, means the same thing, was at hand. So his brothers said to him, "Leave here, go to Judea, that your disciples may also see the works that you're doing. For no one works in secret if he wants to be known openly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world." For not even his brothers believed in him. And Jesus said to them, "My time has not yet come, but your time is already here. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify that its works are evil. You go up to the feast. I am not going to this feast, for my time is not yet fully come." After saying this, he remained in Galilee. But after his brothers had gone up to the feast, then he also went up, not publicly, but in private. The Jews were looking for him at the feast, saying, "Where is he?" And there was much muttering about him among the people. Well, some said, "He is a good man." Others said, "No, he's leading the people astray." Yet for fear of the Jews, no one spoke openly of him. Now, about the middle of the feast, Jesus went up to the temple and began teaching. The Jews, therefore, marveled, saying, "How is it that this man has learning when he's never studied?" What they were saying was, how can Jesus sound so intelligent and so forceful when he's never been trained as a proper rabbi? So Jesus answered them, "My teaching's not mine, but him who sent me. If anyone's will is to do God's will, then he'll know whether my teaching is from God or whether I'm speaking on my own authority. The one who speaks on his own authority seeks his own glory, but the one who seeks the glory of him who sent him is true, and in him there's no falsehood. Has not Moses given you the law? Yet none of you keep the law. Why do you want to kill me?" The conversation took a dark turn. He went from explaining his teaching to, "Didn't Moses give you the law? None of you people are giving it. None of you are keeping the law. Why do you want to kill me?" So the crowd answered, "You must have a demon in you. Who's trying to kill you? Like, come on, you're talking crazy. No one's trying to kill you here. You must have a demon in you. Why are you talking this?" And Jesus answered them, "I did one work, and you all marvel at it. Moses gave you circumcision, not that it was from Moses, but from the fathers. And you circumcise a man on the Sabbath. If on the Sabbath a man receives circumcision, so the law of Moses may not be broken. Are you angry with me because on the Sabbath I made a man's whole body well? Don't judge by appearances, but judge with right judgment." You can see this is the sort of teacher that just confounded everyone. No one quite knew how to take him. Every time you thought you had Jesus pegged into a position, he would say something and then you go, "Oh, I wonder what he's trying to do there." So this morning, like I said, we are going to look at what the brothers said. We're going to look at what the people said. We're going to look at what the crowd said. We're going to look at what the Jews said. And we're going to see, do we ever follow their attitudes? Do we ever mutter about Jesus like they did? And then we're going to close with a proper attitude towards Jesus. So like I said, Jesus was going down to this festival. It was called the Feast of Booths, or the Feast of Tabernacles. And I'm not going to tell you a lot about it this morning because I want to talk about it next week, and it kind of fits more importantly next week. So all you need to know about this feast was it was one of the major ones. It was one of the ones he was expected to go to. It was an autumn harvest feast. It was the time when they would bring in the olives and the grapes, which if you read the prophets are symbols of God's blessing. And it was a time when they celebrated God's presence with them. You see, when they wandered through the wilderness, way back, when they left Egypt, went through the Red Sea, went into the desert, they spent 40 years walking through the desert, God said, "I'm going to pitch my tent with you. I'm going to live with you. I'm going to spend time with you. I'm going to tabernacle with you. That's what the word tent is. And so they celebrate at this festival the fact that doesn't matter how bad things are, where in the wilderness they are, God has stuck with them. It's kind of ironic that God was with them in Jesus and they didn't see it. But anyways, that's, like I said, for next week. If you didn't go to Jerusalem, you were kind of looked down upon. If you didn't make the trips like the faithful Jewish people were supposed to, you were kind of like, oh, you don't think your faith is important enough to go to the thing that Moses told us we should go to? And so for Jesus to do all, remember, he fed 5,000 plus people in Galilee. For the brothers were saying, come on, go down there. They didn't believe him. I don't know how they didn't believe him with all the testimony that would have been flying around there, but I guess when you live with someone, it's hard to believe that there's something more. And the brothers just said, come on, if you think you're that special, if you're all that, if you are who you say you are, if you are what all these people say about you, come to the festival with us and prove it, because no one becomes a good preacher up here. You got to make your mark in Jerusalem. We all know that. The brothers didn't believe Jesus. And they were sarcastic at him. They didn't believe the testimony of the thousands of people that were fed. They missed all of that. And they were just kind of egging him on. But Jesus told them, my time has not yet come. Interesting little thing I wanted to point out to you. There's a couple different words for time in Greek. And two of them that are important are chronos and kairos. Chronos just means time. And kairos means this is the time. When I was in Bible college, I was dating Donna. I'll tell a story. You're here, so you can correct me if I'm wrong. And we would be out, and you'd try to maximize those minutes before curfew, because, like I said, we had curfew back then. And we would be like, oh, wait until the last minute to go back. And if Donna was to look at me and say, what time is it? And she meant, what chronos is it? I would say, oh, it's 11:55. But if she was to look at me and say, oh, what time is it? And I say, it's time to get back to school. That would be what Jesus is talking about here. He's not talking about the time on the clock. He's talking about this is an appointed, special, important time. My time has not come yet. He didn't mean I'm going to wait a couple days and then go. No, he meant the time has not come yet for me to reveal myself. Think of what just happened here. Jesus had an army of 5,000 people plus their families that he just fed. They wanted to make him king, and Jesus slipped away from them. The next thing that happens is they have to go down to this festival in Jerusalem. Can you imagine an army of 5,000 families? If Jesus was to walk down to Jerusalem with them, what would have happened? They would have stormed the city. There would have been a massive mob, and Jesus wouldn't have really had a say in it. They would have made him king. They would have forced him into what they thought he should have been. But Jesus knew it wasn't his time, so he snuck in there secretly later. So I'd suggest that we mutter like the brothers when we expect God to show his power according to our ideas and according to our will. That's exactly what the brothers wanted to do. We mutter like the brothers. I love the word mutter. Sounds like I'm from the East Coast talking about my mom. We mutter. Sorry. My apologies to everyone from the East Coast. We mutter like the brothers when we expect God to heal miraculously whom we decide when we decide it, when we want it, when we tell God what he's going to do. We mutter like the brothers when we expect God to open our child's rebellious eyes according to our timetable when we want our child to return to him. We mutter like the brothers when we say we want revival and we expect your Holy Spirit to do something now because the service starts in 5 minutes. We mutter like the brothers when we demand that God acts according to our will instead of us trying to seek his will. And while we might not be as sarcastic as the brothers, or as challenging, or as obvious as the brothers, we can certainly mutter like them. The next group of people I wanted to look at was the people in verses 10 to 13. After this, the brothers went up, Jesus went up later in private. Everyone was looking for Jesus because they assumed he would be there. I mean, you don't make that big a name for yourself and then not show up. They were all looking for him, and everyone had an opinion about him. If you want to start a rumor, don't show up somewhere. It works awesome. Because you're not there to defend yourself, and everyone goes, oh, I wonder about... And muttering back and forth. Jesus didn't show up. Everyone had an opinion about him. Some said, oh yeah, he's a good man. Others said, he's leading people astray. Everyone was yipping and muttering about what they thought about Jesus. I wanted to show Matthew. I have a YouTube clip set up, queued up for now. This is some interviews that happened in Denver, and I wanted to show them to you. Everyone had a different opinion on them. And it's not too much different today. In Jesus' day, some of the people were saying he's a good man. And some people say today he's a good man. In fact, if you asked most people in the world who are not Christians what they think about Jesus, most would say, oh, he was a good man. They would probably spiritualize a little bit of his life, like the people on the video there in Denver were doing. But they would suggest, yeah, there's something good about him. And the line you hear often is, you know what, he was a really good moral teacher. He taught very good moral things that were important. And I've had C.S. Lewis on the brain this week because Kristen emailed me and was talking to me about C.S. Lewis. And C.S. Lewis, one of his most famous quotes is about this topic. He was brilliant here. And he said this. This is a paragraph from Mere Christianity. He said, I am trying here to prevent anyone saying the really foolish thing that people often say about him. I'm ready to accept that he was a great moral teacher, but I don't accept his claim to be God. That is the one thing we must not say. A man who said the sort of things Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He would either be a lunatic on the level of the man who says he is a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman or something worse. You can shut him up for a fool, you can spit at him and kill him as a demon, or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and God. But let none of us come with any of that patronizing nonsense about him being a great human teacher. He's not left that option open to us. And if you believe everything that Jesus said, he made some very obvious claims, and it's true. But some of the people today, just like them, think, oh, he's just a great human being. Other people, and today as well as then, thought he was leading people astray. There's a movement some of you may have heard of called the New Atheism. If I was to summarize it, the old atheism said basically, you know what, we don't believe that God exists, but if you want to believe that God exists, that just helps you out in your life. Good on you. You have a good time with your delusions. The new atheism is led by people like Sam Harris, who wrote God Is Not Great, and Richard Dawkins, who's written a ton of books, who is a brilliant, witty, interesting man that I read. And I disagree with him, obviously, on one very important issue. And the late Christopher Hitchens, that just passed away, was one of these, the new atheists. And they believe not only that God didn't exist, but that religion is the source of all the evil in the world. Everything bad that's happened can be traced back to religion. And now, I don't disagree that lots of bad things can be traced back to religion in this world. But I obviously don't believe that Jesus was the one who was leading people astray. I think it's more the religion in the world rather than Jesus himself, obviously. So we mutter like the people. When we all bring our own opinions to Jesus and cast Jesus in our own image, making him look like the sort of person that we expect him to be. Because that's what all these people were doing. They were all had their own opinions of them. They were all making him into their own opinions. I have some pictures I wanted to show you. The first one, Matthew, is different people's visions of Jesus. That is a very white Jesus. He has blue eyes and he has long light brown colored hair. The next picture is the Chinese vision of Jesus. The next picture is an African American picture of Jesus. Everyone envisions Jesus according to what they understand and what they think. And I just showed you a physical example. I mean, if we were to really know what Jesus... Sorry. I had a professor who said there's only one physical characteristic we know about Jesus. He was circumcised on the eighth day. We don't know what he looked like, but he probably looked like a typical ethnic Jewish person of the Middle East around that time. But we like to picture him as what we are comfortable with. And we like to turn him into what we think is right. We like to create Jesus, recreate him in our own image. Next, we're going to look at what the Jewish people said. And I remind you what I read. They said, how is he able to teach like this when he hasn't been formally trained? How can Jesus teach with this sort of authority when he hasn't gone through the school that rabbis typically go through to learn everything they need to learn? You see, when rabbis would argue a point, they would always go back to an earlier rabbi that said the thing and base it on that. They would always look kind of like a lawyer looks for a precedent in their case to go forward with it. That's what rabbis would do. They would say, I believe, blah, 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 because remember, Rabbi so-and-so said this. That's how they talked. That's how they were trained to talk. That's how they always talked. And if you read rabbinic literature, that's what you'll see. I believe this because Rabbi so-and-so said this about this, and it follows from that. To not quote your sources, to not cite the people that came before you was the height of arrogance. And when Jesus taught, he never said that. He never said, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, because Rabbi so-and-so said this. No, he just said it. He had an authority that was in himself, and it offended people. It made him think that he was reckless, that he was beyond the law. He had no formal training because he relied on his relationship with his father. And we mutter, like the Jewish leaders of that day, when we try to sit around and judge Jesus' teaching, instead of allowing Jesus' teaching to change us. This is essentially what we were doing back in the dorm room that I started with when we were talking about, well, did Jesus lie? Well, let's see this. Well, let's see that. We can't have the idea that we are the final judges of what Jesus has said. God has chosen to speak to us in two ways, primary ways. He's chosen to speak to us through his written word, and he's chosen to speak through us ultimately through his son, Jesus Christ. Some call him the living word. And when we read the written word, his spirit opens our eyes to understand it, to illuminate it, to bring it to the front. And it's a danger in Bible college. It's one of the biggest dangers in school is to learn all these tools for studying the Bible and think that we can just tweak it and adjust it and change it to make it say what we want to say. And it's something I wrestle with all the time. I'm always having to think, am I saying that just because it's one of my pet peeves or my hobby horses or something else? Or is it really in there? We mutter like the Jewish people when we consider that we are the judges over Jesus' teaching, when in reality, the word judges us. And finally, I want to look at what the crowd said. Because remember, Jesus finished that speech to the Jews by saying, why do you want to kill me? Incidentally, I ran into a person this week who called the police a number of times because he thought someone was trying to kill him. They weren't. He had some mental issues. And that's what the people said about Jesus. Jesus said, why do you want to kill me? And the people that didn't know what was going on, they jumped to the conclusion, okay, hold on here, you're losing it. You must have a demon in you because you're talking crazy right now. No one's trying to kill you. Come on. Everyone knows that that's a sign of psychosis. And when, what are you talking about? Why? But Jesus knew better. Jesus knew what was going on. Do you remember what happened the last time Jesus was in Jerusalem? He went to the pool where people would lay around and they would believe that if they were the first to roll into the pool after the waters were stirred, they would be healed of their disease. And Jesus looked at the man by the pool and said, do you want to be well? And the man didn't answer him that properly, but Jesus said, take up your mat and walk. And he got up and walked, and it happened to be Saturday. And so the Jewish people, instead of celebrating, the religious leaders, I mean, not all the Jewish people, but the religious leaders of that day, instead of celebrating that this man was healed and could walk again after 30-some years, they were upset and frustrated that Jesus decided to do that on Saturday, the Sabbath, because you don't do that on the Sabbath. And eventually, Jesus was run out of town, and they were looking for a reason to kill Jesus because he was disregarding the Sabbath law. And so that's what Jesus starts talking to now. The crowd jumped to the conclusion that he was just talking crazy, but Jesus knew what was going on. And he argues against him. And he uses Moses' own law against him, which is kind of interesting. I'm not going to go into the details of it, because that's not the point of the message this morning. The point of this point is this. We mutter like the crowd when we jump to the same quick conclusions about Jesus' teaching. Jesus says some stuff that's plain offensive. I talked about that last week. Some of Jesus' teaching can be shocking. Sometimes when we're trying to follow Jesus and we feel a nudge in our heart towards something, we can be so repulsed or so shocked by what Jesus wants us to do. We jump to quick conclusions and mutter like those people. Oh, that can't be right. That must have come from the devil, because that's just crazy talk. I want to give you an example of one of the things that made a fuss recently. And before Osama bin Laden was killed, if you could show this. This was a billboard that made its way around Jesus loves Osama, and underneath it says Jesus said love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. And the next billboard is my personal favorite. That love your neighbor thing, I meant it. Some of the things that Jesus say, if we take it out of I saith unto you, love thy neighbor. If we take it out of the formal religious sort of voice and we really listen to what he's saying, it's just plain old shocking. Love, bless those who persecute you. Do good to those who spitefully use you. The things that Jesus say don't make us comfortable all the time. And we mutter like the crowds when we jump to conclusions and assume that what we hear can't be from God, because there's no way Jesus would say something like that, right? So here's how I'm going to close the message. Philippians 2. Actually, I'll ask the band to come up. Philippians chapter 2. I think we'd all agree that there are times in our life where we can and have muttered about Jesus, and we've forced our own opinions onto him instead of allowing his opinions to form us. And so here's a proper attitude towards Jesus in Philippians chapter 2, verse 5. Have this mind among yourselves, which was in Christ Jesus, who though he was in the form of God, he did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but instead he made himself nothing, taking on the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men. And being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. And that's the point of the story that we're looking at. We're looking at Jesus who humbled himself and became obedient right to the point of death. But the story doesn't end there. Therefore, God has highly exalted him and has bestowed on him the name that is above every name, so that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Our proper response to Jesus as Christians is not muttering about what he has to say, but is falling at his feet and worshiping him.